thankful for the opportunity tonight to speak to the group and especially to speak to our young people. I'm planning at least once a month, probably on a Sunday evening, to have something special for our young people during the summer months. That will be tonight and then once in June, once in July, and once in August. We probably will use the slides some of the time, some of the Bible stories and other things, but we want to have at least one service each month in which we emphasize our young people. I'd like first tonight to take just a moment and express some appreciation. I appreciate the young people sitting up here like they are tonight. I wish each one of you had the opportunity to stand up here where I stand and look out and see one, two, three, four, about five seats that are pretty full of our 7th through 12th graders, and then over here our tweens. And I guess it will be in June that our 6th graders that are over here will be promoted over here, and we'll get rid of some of you ugly seniors, some of you seniors. We'll have some changes made, but we're thankful for the tweens that are over here too. I want to express appreciation to the parents. Can you imagine all that's gone into bringing this group of young people to where they are today? And we appreciate what you parents do. I appreciate the attitude that our eldership has toward our young people. There is hardly ever a Sunday when the elders meet, and I have the privilege of meeting with them most of the time, but that there is something said about our youth work. And I tell you, I can speak from being with them, and I can tell you without any doubt that all 10 of our elders are solidly behind our youth group, constantly looking for ways to do things to help you. Brother Miller and Brother Oldham are the two elders that work especially with the young people, but all of them are interested. And then there are two deacons that I especially want to recognize tonight, and I'm sure there are other deacons that are on the committees with the youth and the tweens, but Larry Bloomingberg is a key person in our work. The young people like to refer to him as Dr. B, and Larry Bloomingberg is very helpful. He's very helpful to us in organizing things. We appreciate what he does. And another Larry, Larry Oldham, is very helpful with our tweens. We've got first and second Larry. I don't know which one we'll call which. But we appreciate so much what's done by all of these folks. We developed a new list of our young people the other day. Larry Bloomingberg brought by to me a list of the 7th through the 12th. I don't think I have a list of the tweens yet. And I believe with the changes that have been made and what we've added, that somewhere around 61, isn't it, Larry? That may vary one or two. 61. We have a smaller senior class this year than usual. We have 8. But we have, I believe, 14 juniors. And our 7th and 8th grade class on Wednesday night is having about 24 to 26 7th and 8th graders in that class. And I did a little bit of analysis of our young people, and out of those 61, I believe that about 54 or 55 are already Christians. And most of them are here on a regular basis. Folks, I've preached for congregations that didn't have that many people. Can you imagine the impact that this youth group can have in our work here? And I want to say to you young people, especially those of you in the 7th through the 12th grade who are here, I appreciate your being on these front seats. I appreciate you being here for the right reason and to worship. Now, we have three priorities, 1, 2, and 3. The first thing we want is every young person from the 7th grade and up on these front seats worshiping God and behaving. The third thing that we would want is you being up here and some of you misbehaving. The second preference would be for those of you who can't behave to sit with your parents. But our first preference, and generally speaking, I think most of you understand this and practice it, but I want you to know how important it is when you're up here on these front seats, or for that matter, anywhere. And not just the young people, that applies to all of us. When we come together to worship God, it's a serious matter. Now, many of you young people know we get out on the basketball court, out in the dust or wherever. I'll get out there and play with you and sweat with you and laugh with you and talk with you, and I enjoy that, but not in a service like this. So I want you to know how much we appreciate your being here, but I want you to know how much we appreciate you worshiping God and taking matters seriously. Having said those things tonight by way of introduction, I want to talk to you about three areas of thought for just a few minutes. I'm going to be using mainly the books of Timothy. Timothy was a young man. Paul, an older preacher, wrote to him and talked to him about several things. Over in 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter and verse 12, is a verse that you young people have heard quoted time and time again. Let no man despise thy youth. All of you could quote that part of the verse, couldn't you? Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers. Be thou an example. Now, there's a sense in which you as young people expect those of us that are a bit older to be the examples, and we ought to be. I have a responsibility to set the right kind of example before you. But Paul says here to a young man, you need to also be an example. You be an example of the believers. And he goes ahead and says, how? You be an example of the believers in word, in conversation. That word means conduct, manner of life. In charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You be an example of the believers. And I think that that's the way we need to look at our young people today. And I really believe that many of you, maybe all of you to some extent, are being great examples for the Lord and for the Lord's work. But tonight I want to talk to you about three things that I've called challenges to you as young people. And as those of you that are a bit older listen tonight, realize that these points apply to all of us. But we're making them apply especially tonight. And I want to talk about three M's. You can remember things that start with the same letter better, can't you? I want to talk to you about money, morals, and mission. Money. Most preachers can't talk long without talking about money, can they? Money, morals, and mission. If you look over in chapter 2 from where we were reading, over in the 6th chapter of 1 Timothy at verse 10, there's a statement that we sometimes misquote. Some people will quote that and say that money is the root of all evil, but that's not what it says. It says what? The love of money is the root of all evil, doesn't it? And what that verse is saying, what Paul is trying to get across to the young man Timothy is that you need to have the right attitude toward money. Now, when we're younger, sometimes we're always wanting a little bit more. Some of us are like old MacDonald's wife with a gimme, gimme here and a gimme, gimme there. And sometimes it seems we never have enough, and at least we parents think you never have enough because you're always asking. But money is something that has to be put in proper focus. And when I'm talking about money, really I'm talking about material things, possessions that we have, not just the change in our pocket and the greenback in a billfold or a purse, but I'm talking about our attitude toward money and what money will buy. It's very important for you to develop the right attitude toward money when you are younger. If you do, it will help you to be successful. If you don't, it will be a thorn in the flesh as you get older. Let me just say two or three things about money. One, we need to earn our money in an honest way. Now, even those of you that are tweens, you're beginning to do things to earn a little bit of money. And those of you that are a little older, many of you are even looking for jobs for the summer because you want to be able to earn money. And that's commendable. That's good. But always approach it in an honest way. Always try to do the best job you can do. If someone hires you to babysit or to mow a yard, do the best job that you can do. If dads and mothers tell you if you'll do certain things around the house or around the yard or whatever, that they will give you so much money, try to do the best job that you can do. We need to be sure that we earn our money in an honest way. Work is important. If a man will not work, neither let him eat. Paul said that to the Thessalonians. If you're reading in your Bible, you just have to turn back two or three pages to the 3rd chapter of 2 Thessalonians and you would see that. Then when you earn money, what do you do with it? You have to make some decisions. It's not wrong for you to spend some of it on yourself. And I would encourage you to think about doing things for yourself. But it is wrong to spend everything on yourself. We need to do things for others, for our parents, for our families, for our friends. And I believe something, young folks, that's very important is that you learn to give on the first day of the week as early in life as you can. In fact, I would even encourage the parents in the audience, before our young people begin to earn money for themselves, that you talk with them about giving on the first day of the week and allow your children to have something to give. I know it's important to keep records, but I believe the IRS will even work with you for enough for your children to be able to give something on the Lord's Day. And then when you begin to earn money for yourself, I mentioned a few minutes ago that about 90% of you in the 7th through the 12th grade are already Christians. That verse that says every one of you lay by and store up on the first day of the week as God has prospered him, do you think that refers to young people as well as older people? You think it refers to all of us? The passages that tell us to sing, does that mean young Christians and older Christians? Pray, young Christians and older Christians? I believe it is very, very important for you to begin, if you haven't already, and I'm sure many of you have already, to learn to lay by in store on the first day of the week on a regular basis. When I was 13, the age of those of you that are about in the 7th grade now, or the 8th grade, I began preaching. I started preaching for little congregations. One Sunday I was paid $3. Another Sunday I was paid $5, and I got rich one Sunday I was paid $10. I determined right then that I would lay aside some to give to the Lord every Lord's Day. That was 1953. That's been 41 years. And I still believe that principle is true. Now there may be times that you will not have had any income during the week. And God only expects us to do what we can. But let me encourage every one of you young people to start right now and begin to plan to give to the Lord every first day of the week. And I have found, and I even use this principle now, I have found that if I'll take out what belongs to the Lord and never consider it to be mine, that it will be there, and if I don't, I may spend it and then not have it when I'm supposed to lay by in store on the first day of the week. I even like to stay ahead instead of getting behind. But I want you to understand, and all of you to understand, that God expects you to have the right attitude toward money. And when you earn something, especially when you are a Christian, that those commandments that have to do with laying by in store and purposing in the heart to give cheerfully applies to you just as much as it does to me. Now, in addition to our regular giving and our attitude toward money, we're in a very special time right now. You've heard us make appeal to the whole congregation in the last 2 months about our new building. And although the new building will be for everybody, it's going to be especially for you young people. And I think I've not been in many discussions about it, but that something's been said about what we can do with and for our young people with this new building. We've challenged you with some specific responsibilities. We've challenged the whole congregation. And I know personally that there are some adults that are giving sacrificially. I know of some people who are doing without some things in order to give a little extra on our building program. And I hope that all of us will take that attitude to some extent. But that's the challenge that we have before you. Money isn't worth anything in and of itself. When we leave this earth, we don't take it with us. Maybe we won't leave a little bit behind for our kids. One fellow, when they read his will, he said, being of sound mind and good judgment, I spent every penny I had. And I don't know, maybe that's the best approach. But you and I need to be concerned about our attitude toward money. Money is wonderful. It's going to take money to build a building. It's going to take money to get you an education. It's going to take money to do a lot of things. But it's when we have the right attitude toward it and we use it in the right way that we can be successful. So the first M is money. The second M that I want to mention to you tonight as I give you some challenges is the word morality, morals. And I believe that there's really a challenge to you as young people today. Every generation has been faced with temptations. When I was your age, I was faced with some temptations. Although I grew up far out in the country, there are a lot of problems I didn't know existed till later. But you're faced with a lot of decisions today. Over in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, the latter part of verse 22, he uses three words, keep thyself pure. Keep thyself pure. Now, sometimes you may get a little bit tired of hearing preachers and teachers talk about some of these things, but we don't do it just to hear ourselves talk. We're interested in you. I'd like to see, for example, the 61 of you that are on that list, the 7th through the 10th grade or the 12th grade. On down the line a few years, I'd like to see every one of you have a Christian home. That'd be 61 Christian homes, right? No, because some of you marry each other. You don't believe you will now, but you watch it. But think about all the Christian homes. Just think about this group that's sitting right over here. If every one of these young people sitting on these three seats right here can grow up and when they're old enough to marry, can be Christians and marry Christians and have Christian homes, think about the impact that that can have for the Lord's kingdom. But young people, you can't do that successfully unless you try to have good morals. Now, when I'm talking about moral standards, there are a lot of things involved. Cheating, stealing, lying. You could go on and make the list even longer. But tonight, I want to mention especially two things. And somehow or other, I'll get back to these two things when we're talking about morals almost all the time. One of them is drugs. And one of them is having the right kind of respect for your own body. And being sure that you do not violate the purity and the sanctity of your body. I'm sure that you know better than I do some of the temptations that you have in these areas. It's been a while since I've been in high school. It's been a while since I've been in junior high or fifth or sixth grade. And I'm sure that those of you, especially in junior and senior high, see some things that I don't see, and you probably understand some of these things better than I do. But I know the temptation is there. I know that there is pressure for you to use drugs. And young people, when you let yourself get involved in using drugs in that way, you're asking for trouble. You can ruin your own body. You can ruin your own mind. You can ruin your own family. You can get hooked on something and break your family financially and cause them heartache after heartache. I don't believe you want that. And I believe you can see through it. I really don't think I have to tell you these things. I think you know them. But sometimes even we adults don't do the things that we know. There's a story over in Judges 16 about a man named Samson. You remember Samson, strong man? He fell in love with a woman by the name of Delilah. And Delilah put pressure on her, on him, somewhat like your peers sometimes put pressure on you. She said, "Oh, tell me where your strength is." Well, he lied to her the first time. He said, "If you take seven," basically he's talking about green pieces of bark, "and bind me, I couldn't do anything." Well, she did. And she called the Philistines, and they came in to get him. But he broke those pieces of bark. Well, a little later she said, "Tell me where your strength is." He said, "Oh, if you take new ropes that have never been used and you bind me, I couldn't do anything from the standpoint of strength." You'd think he'd learn the first time, wouldn't you? But the second time he told her, he lied to her again. And the second time the Philistines came. And the third time he said, "If you'll take the seven locks of my hair and put them in a web, I'll be powerless." And the third time the Philistines came. Now, I believe if I was with somebody that I was supposed to love and supposed to love me, supposed to be my friend, and after the third time I'd seen this person bring an army to get me, I think I'd learn a little, don't you? But Samson, and maybe instead of being just the strongest man, was the stupidest man perhaps that ever lived. And the fourth time he told her the truth. He said, "If you'll cut my hair." And they came and cut his hair, and he saw the Philistines coming. And I want you to read this sometime. Here's a key point. He went out thinking he could overpower them then. It says that he went out expecting to do what he'd done before. He knew he'd told them the truth, and he knew his head had been shaved, but somehow or other, Samson thought, "Well, I can handle it." But he couldn't. You remember they put his eyes out, and you know the rest of the story. Now, young people, when you let somebody sell you a bill about using some drugs, pardon me for being frank, but you're just as stupid as Samson was. And you're going to be just as blind as he was later on if you're not careful. Keep your moral standards high. Be ready to come to that marriage altar with your body and your mind clean and pure. And conduct yourself with other people so that when you're walking down the street, you don't have to hang your head when you meet anybody. Man or woman, boy or girl. And when you hear the siren going, you don't have to wonder if the police are coming after you. Now, I'll admit, my heart does a skip when I see a blue light behind me, even if I know I'm doing the speed limit. And I don't guess I'll ever get to where I don't have that little skip beat when I see a blue light or hear a siren. But if you're doing what's right, you know they're not coming after you. The challenge of money and the challenge of morals. Number three, the challenge of your mission. The song that we sang a few minutes ago, "I'm a Hard-Fighting Soldier." Did you notice what that chorus said, Gary? What are we doing? We're going to be bringing others to Jesus by the service that we give, right? Bringing others to Jesus by the service that we give. Let me show you something just a few verses down from where he said, "Let no man despise thy youth." He says, "Take heed unto thyself and to the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both," notice, "save thyself and them that hear thee." Save thyself and others. Let me commend you young people for something that I don't know whether you realize or not. In the last 6 or 7 years, this youth group, and when I say this youth group, I mean those that have been in the youth group and gone on as well as these, have brought more people to be baptized than the rest of this entire congregation. You go back and look at the records and you'll see that I'm telling you the truth. And there are many of you right now that are bringing your friends to Bible study. I was in the 7th and 8th grade class the other night, and I was having to introduce myself to some people because there were some new ones there that I didn't know who they were. Every one of you is capable of bringing at least one person with you. And as we have more opportunities to do other things together in our youth work, I believe this is one of the great things of reaching out, that we'll be able to reach out. There are some young people in this community that are hurting. There are some young people who do not have others that care for them like they would like. And if you, with the help of those of us that are a bit older, can reach out and bring them with you to our Bible classes and our worship services and our activities, our spiritual activities and our fun activities, and we can get them interested and we can teach them who Jesus is and what He means and what He can mean to anybody, I believe that's the mission. That's the mission that this youth group has. The things that we do like devotions and the things that we do like trips that are taken and even the fun things that we do, those are not ends within themselves, and all of us adults need to realize that. These are ways of helping our young people to grow up themselves and to reach out to bring others. Sometimes we have to get the attention of other people and get them here before we can teach them. These are ways, these are methods. And I think this is the mission that our youth group has. It's the mission that all of us really have as we think about doing the work of the Lord. Money, morals, and mission. I'd like to challenge you in the youth group. And before I do, let me tell you this. Any way I can help you, I'm here to work with you. I'm here to help you. I'll cry with you. I'll laugh with you. I'd like to play ball with you if you want me on your team. I'm here to help you. Our elders are here to help you. I believe the parents are here to help you. And I think you'll see us all looking for more ways to help. But our challenge is to you. All we can do is help you to have the right attitude toward money, the right attitude toward morals, and the right attitude toward the mission of saving yourself and bringing somebody else to Christ. I want you to remember those three M's. There's a 3M company, isn't there? Well, this is our 3M company tonight. Money, morals, and mission. And having the right attitude toward those. And I continue to say to you, as I do to all the adults, the best way to develop the right attitude toward all of those and to live right is just to be a Christian, a good day-in, day-out Christian. Those of you that are already Christians, we're thankful you are. We want to help you live a Christian life. If you have a problem, let us help you straighten that problem out between you and God or between you and somebody else. If you're not a Christian, and as those of you that are a little younger get older, and many of you even over on this side are already Christians, let us help you. We want to help you to be baptized into Christ, to live for Him. We will challenge you, but we'll work with you to help you meet those challenges, because we believe that you, as a youth group, are the greatest possession that we have on this earth, and we want to do everything that we can to help you. And the greatest thing that you as a dad or a mother or a granddad or a grandmother can do for these young people is to be a Christian and set the right kind of example. And so it's for that reason, along with many others, that we say if you need to come to Christ, come as together we stand and sing.
Jesus, I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me. The cross before me, the world behind me. No turning back, no turning back. I have surrendered my all to Jesus. I have surrendered my all to Jesus. I have surrendered my all to Jesus. No turning back, no turning back.
Need to mention just two or three things. Cliff McCoy expects to get out of intensive care probably tomorrow and is doing better. Charlene Brown, who broke her ankle, expects to come home tomorrow. She's going to have a long recovery period but is doing well. May Hamlet, the sister-in-law to Ernestine Gardner and Benny's aunt, is very sick in Lexington, Tennessee. We need to remember all of these. If you've not had the opportunity to observe the Lord's Supper, you may go during the singing of the closing song, and you will be served over in the educational building. It's left prepared there, and we encourage you to go during the singing of the closing song. As I mentioned this morning, Judy and I will be leaving just after the service to head toward West Virginia. We encourage you to remember us in your prayers, and in fact, many of our folks are traveling, leaving Freed Hardeman, going home, and traveling in many ways. I think the group's leaving to go to New Zealand, maybe other places. Let's remember each other in our prayers and pray for one another. Again, I want to say to our young people tonight how much I appreciate you being here and how you behave so wonderfully and listened. We're so thankful for you.
Number 729 will be our closing song.
Soon and very soon we are going to see the King. Soon and very soon we are going to see the King. Soon and very soon we are going to see the King. Hallelujah, hallelujah.